14. What are you looking at? Ellen cracked the faceplate of Jun's visor with a single blow. Jun reeled backward, her head hitting the cliff face, the servo motors struggling to keep her upright, and Ellen striking again, again, again. Inside the suit, Jun's vision was fractured, a rainbow line across the screen, the colors oscillating red and blue and green and silver. Stop, Jun was saying over and over again. Stop, whatever you think is happening, that's not what's happening. Look, said Jun. Look! She peeled open the faceplate of her suit. The visor, cracked, screeched as it retracted. But seeing her real face, Ellen paused. A person inside the oyster shell. Just a human, with squashy human flesh. Something really, really weird is going on, said Jun. And I don't understand it, but look, these suits. Lank thinks Fantail made them, and you think Fantail made them, and maybe they did, but look! She stepped out of the suit. And then she was just a person in stained sweatpants and an old ringer t-shirt. She put one palm against the interior of the suit and tugged at the soft fabric lining. If there's a weapon in there, I'm going to kill you, said Ellen. No, said Jun. And she was almost laughing and almost crying. It's not a weapon. I know these things are sophisticated or whatever, with the bits inside that bulge out and coalesce, and I thought, I've seen this before. I know I've seen this before. I just couldn't remember where. She peeled back the soft fabric at the crotch. There were concentric circles outlined in the plastic. These haven't been specially made, she said. They're repurposed. Cleverly repurposed, fine, but I've seen them before. They were sex suits. For long-distance virtual sex, or if your avatars in the metaverse want to bone or whatever. They could all see it then. The bulging pods and soft squishy parts. The interface areas where a device could be slotted into place. The concentric circles depending on whether you wanted a larger girth. What the fuck? Said Lank. Ellen looked to her right, as if someone was there. Jun thought, I don't know what the right thing to do is. But I know that if Ellen Bywater kills me, then I don't get to do anything else. Whatever gets you to the next part. Someone repurposed these things, said Jun. Like, I'm serious. You guys have rivals, don't you? There's not just the three of you in the whole world. Maybe someone else did all this. I don't know who, but this isn't tech made for survival. This is made to be controlled remotely, you know? Maybe someone's out there telling the suits what to say. There had been many technologies like this. Supposed machine recognition that actually turned out to be tens of thousands of people in India or Venezuela or Ghana going through photos or translating documents or transcribing voicemails or reviewing automatic writing outputs. Because tens of thousands of humans can still do a lot of stuff better and, crucially, cheaper than machines. And because customers felt better if they believed their voice messages were being transcribed by a computer than by a person. Marius would have said, we made ourselves a mechanical god, so we could worship it. Who? Said Ellen. Is it Gnomic? I mean, I think we just need to all sit down and chill out, said Jun, and figure out what we know. Pool our information. Not trusting one another was fine. That was to be expected. But if this was boiling over into violence, it was most likely to end with more punches to Jun's own head. I just want to know, said Ellen, and her voice was level, but she was the opposite of calm. I just want to know who the fuck it is, okay? I want you to tell me who the fuck it is. The two of you. Lank drew breath, and Jun understood that sometimes you can know the future. You can know it in the inability of people to change, in their desire to have things over. If you can't tolerate uncertainty, you will try to make things certain. Sometimes the only way to make them certain is to make them bad. It hadn't taken much for Lank and Ellen to get to this stage. It is my island, said Lank. I acknowledge that, and I take responsibility for that part. And, as things do, things began to move very quickly. The hypothalamic pituitary axis releases a shower of adrenaline and cortisol, and the heart pumps blood to the muscles, and the head reels with the shock and fear of a new battle. It would take a lifetime of training to respond to violence with kindness and calm. Deep belly breaths among the redwoods won't touch it. Ellen's attack was loud and instant, a streaking fist to Lank's head. He was ready for her. They fought, metal on metal, kicked out with mechanized legs, one blow coming up at his face and smashing into the screen of his visor, making it bloom with bright color. He had a handheld blowtorch he'd brought up from the caves, small but intense. He pressed it directly to the jaw latch of Ellen's helmet, the metal already beginning to warp from the heat. He flamed the blowtorch on a dried creeper. The fire rose up around her and, panicking, she let go for a moment. He pulled away, then came back harder, walloping the visor screen again and again with the heel of his hand. She struggled, kicked out at him, a lucky blow taking his knee sideways. He crashed to earth. When he fell, Ellen fled. Lank clambered clumsily to his feet. "Stop," said Shun. "Please stop now. Let her go. Let her think it through." Ellen ran through the jungle, thinking of Albert Dabrowski's face when she took his company from him. She knew that if she could have seen her own face, that is how she would have looked.